You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
6 minutes after 12, good afternoon to you. You are with the Women's Day edition of the Midday Report. I'm Clement Banyatela, standing in for Stephen Crotas. You're welcome to join our conversation. Tweet me at The Real Clement M or SMS me at 31702 or 31567. Coming up on the show, we'll take you to Cape Town, where the DA is announcing its next plan of action following the failed motion of no confidence in the president. We'll also go to the Northern Cape, where President Jacob Zuma will address a Women's Day commemoration, and we'll get the latest on the elections in Kenya. But we start here. President Jacob Zuma surviving yet another motion of no confidence in him yesterday, but by a thin margin. Out of the 384 members of parliament who voted, 198 MPs voted for the president. President to stay, 177 voted for him to go, while 9 MPs abstained. If you do the political math, at least about 26 ANC MPs defied the party. Well, those MPs are now coming under fire from some ANC leaders for breaking ranks. One of those leaders is Lindiwe Zulu, and she's now accused those ANC MPs of being sellouts. I spoke to the NEC member a short while ago, and I started by asking her why she believes action must be taken against the ANC MPs who voted to oust the president.
The first thing and most important thing is that as an organization, when we take collective decisions in an ANC meeting and we say this is the way we're going to go as far as whatever is on the table, that includes this motion of no confidence. And we base ourselves on this motion of confidence that we are convinced that the opposition is not interested in anything else but to continue weakening the African National Congress. And therefore, the ANC members and cadres of the ANC need to stick to an agreement that is a decision, not agreement, decision that is made and done by the collective. We have to stick to that, because if we don't do that, we set a wrong precedent. When the next president, some members of the ANC might like him, might not like him, because you remember we go to conference and we vote. And always when we vote, you will see that when people are voting for the president, deputy president, it's not everybody at the conference who ends up voting for that president, because that's just a democracy in the ANC. But once there's been a complete vote that says the first person who got the biggest votes is this one, we all rally around that person. Now, this that happened in parliament is completely and utterly unacceptable for members of the African National Congress to vote with the opposition. But of course, I don't want to speculate, because we don't, there's just a lot of speculation around and lots of names being brandished around, which also is not correct to do. Because what the ANC then needs to do is to sit down and say, let's count everything that we heard, that we saw, and then let us look at who voted with the opposition. How can members of the African National Congress vote with the opposition?
Yeah, and I think what is not speculation, Minister, is that there are ANC members of parliament who did vote with the opposition. And I want to hear from you, what kind of action would you like to see taken against these MPs?
The good thing in the ANC is that we do have processes. We've got a disciplinary committee. It becomes completely independent of how a Lindiwe Zulu feels or anybody feels. It's about what is the case that's being put on the table by the disciplinary committee. And I'm sure you are aware already that from a KZN point of view, there is a process that is taking place with regard to one of the MPs, MP cause. There is a process which is a good process, because the ANC also needs to be able to continuously maintain discipline in itself. But it also has to make sure that there's democracy, there's no intolerance in the ANC. All members of the African National Congress have got the right to be able to express themselves at any time. However, there is a code that is understood by us all. It has always been a practice. It's not to say that I'm sitting here as Lindiwe Zulu. I've always been entirely happy with whatever decisions other comrades make. But one thing that I'm very sure of, which should be the discipline of the ANC, once we've taken a collective decision, then that decision is binding to everybody.
Yeah. But Minister, the Constitutional Court clarified that members of Parliament are constitutionally obliged to vote according to their conscience. And it said no member can suffer any harm or hardship or any punitive action if they vote according to this conscience. And you're saying the ANC must go against this.
I'm not saying that the ANC is going to go against that. Let us not get into that kind of a debate, because all of us in Parliament are members of political parties. We go according to the decisions of the political party, and that's got nothing to do with the ANC alone. I can guarantee you, when an issue is being dealt with by other political parties and they make certain decisions, those decisions are binding for their members. Mm. Why must it be different for the African National Congress?
Do you agree,
though? We refuse to be drawn into that space.
Yeah, and do you agree, though, Minister, that as a member of Parliament, you have sworn your allegiance to the Constitution and the electorate and not necessarily the party?
Let me start here. Mm. I am in Parliament on the basis of being voted in by members of the African National Congress. That's very important. While the Constitution can be able to say what it says, the bottom line is this. I'm a member of the African National Congress. And when collectively as an ANC, we make a particular decision, we go according to that decision. If then other people come to us and say, no, but you see now the Constitution says this, that's another story altogether which can be discussed within the ANC and those who are unhappy with decisions that we have taken as an ANC and implemented on the basis of our membership of the ANC. That cannot be changed. We are members of the ANC. We have the discipline of the ANC. Same thing applies to all other political parties. They have their own internal discipline, which they are very straight about. Yeah. Everybody needs to keep to the party discipline.
Yeah.
Until such time that there's a change in as far as people being elected to parliament, constituency base and whatever, we're not there yet. Right now, we are members of the ANC. When we collectively agree on how we're going to go, we go that way, because we can't set a wrong precedent. We are going to have chaos in our organization if we continue that way.
I just want to move to that vote of no confidence. Here's what confuses me. The motion of no confidence was about the president, but unlike previous debates of this kind of motion, ANC MPs didn't defend the president. And by that, I mean, they didn't really tell South Africans why they have confidence in the president.
That's
no mention of his successes.
No, that's your own conclusion. You have listened because you were probably looking for that. We went to caucus. There were decisions at caucus that were taken as to how we're going to go through in this thing. And the fact of the matter is that we have to defend the African National Congress. That's the bottom line. If anyone thinks the politics they're seeing here is all about just President Zuma, they are mistaken.
But previously, MPs have defended the president.
What do you mean?
They've mentioned his successes when motions of no confidence were debated, and that was different yesterday.
No. Let's not go there. I'm making this statement to you, as the SG and everybody else has made that statement. We went in there to defend the African National Congress, members of the African National Congress, and that includes the president.
All right.
Period.
ANC NEC member Lindi Wezulu, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, listening to that is the SACP's acting spokesperson, Mhlekwa Nxumalo. Good afternoon to you, Mhlekwa. Are you happy or disappointed as the SACP with the outcome of yesterday's vote?
We were quite okay with the vote yesterday, the SACP, because of our view that the motion as submitted by the opposition parties was not just the motion that was targeting the president of the country, but it was the motion that was meant to target the African National Congress, and that is why we had said that. We will ask everyone else to ensure that the ANC is defended. Although, on the other hand, we still maintain our position that the president has to resign failing which the ANC has to recall the president of the republic.
Yeah, but Mhlako, I'm a bit confused because the SACP maintains its call for President Jacob Zuma to step down, but yet its leaders in parliament go and defend the same president it once removed from office. How? Unless you're telling me that those leaders in parliament voted in support of the motion.
No, we were not supporting the motion. The motion was not meant to remove Zuma. And me and you, if you listen very well to what Musima Imane, the leader of the opposition, was saying, he was very clear that this motion is not about Zuma. This motion was about the ANC.
And that is why
we have said that we are not going to support such a motion. That is a motion that has to do with the ANC. We have said that the ANC has to do the right thing and act against the president.
And how different then, if this motion of no confidence was against the ANC, how different was it from the previous motions of no confidence? Because I remember very well where ANC MPs would go on the podium and they would defend the president specifically and directly in that motion of no confidence, the previous ones that have been tabled in parliament. But yesterday, like Lindiwe Zulu confirmed a short while ago, there was a decision, strategic decision taken that we are focusing on the party. Why was that?
I can't get your question well.
You're saying that the motion of no confidence was intended to remove the ANC from power. And I'm asking, why do you say so? Because for the first time yesterday, we had ANC members of parliament defending the African National Congress during a debate on the motion of no confidence in the president and not defending the president. And I know previously they've done so in such motions where they've mentioned his successes, they've mentioned his plans, and they've said, we can't have him removed from office. Why this time around did those ANC MPs not show the president that they support him and they're still happy with him by mentioning his successes?
The difference between now and previously is that some of us, like the SACP, COSATU, some of the ANC leaders, the veterans, you can name them, have officially came out and asked that the president has to resign. And when we went to parliament yesterday, it was not about him, it was just about the party. While previously there was no such a call that internally that was calling for the president to resign. That's the difference. There are members of the ANC that have said that President Zuma has to resign.
And out of the 26 or so members of parliament belonging to the ANC that voted in support of this motion, can you confirm that none of those were members and leaders of the SACP?
We will not isolate SACP members who are ANC MPs from the rest of the ANC MPs collective. We have not done this thing before, and we are not going to do this because they didn't go to parliament to represent the SACP. They went there to represent the ANC, and the ANC represent the entire alliance in parliament. Now, we cannot isolate on who voted or the SACP members that have there voted against the motion or for the motion.
Okay. So you've asked the president to step down. He didn't listen. You asked the ANC to recall him. They didn't listen. You went to parliament yesterday and you defended the motion of no confidence in him. What's the next plan for the SACP?
We have called for the for an urgent alliance political council where this matter has to be discussed and be resolved. Because we think that this is not just the problem of the SACP or the problem of COSAT, but it's the problem of the entire movement. And the movement has to do the right thing. And we have said that, and we still maintain it today, that the only right thing to do now is to ask the president to resign, failing which he has to be recalled.
But Mhlako, you've been calling for that alliance political council. The ANC hasn't put up a date. In fact, there was a date that they had agreed to, but they then cancelled. And I know that some of the SACP leaders were not happy with that. What gives you the confidence that the ANC is suddenly going to come up and say, this is the date where we're going to meet for that alliance political council before December?
No, our view is that we have asked the ANC to convene this meeting. But we have also added during our Congress that if the ANC is not willing to call the alliance meeting, we are going to convene. It will take the responsibility and convene the meeting. And we are going to take a decision there as the alliance, those that will be there. Because all of us are equal in the alliance. If SANCO and COSATU and the SACP attend and agree on something, we'll take that as the alliance decision, with or without the African National Congress. But we are still confident that the discussion we have had with the ANC on the sidelines during the recent NEC Likhutla, we are confident that this meeting will be called urgently.
All right, good luck with that. Acting spokesperson, Mhlapa Nxumalo, thank you so much for your time.
All right, thanks.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
All right, we continue with reaction from yesterday's motion of no confidence in the president. Let's now bring in Ranjeni Monsami, associate editor at Tiso Black Star. Good afternoon to you, Ranjeni, and happy Women's Day. Look, I think we did expect that this motion of no confidence was going to fail, but were you also surprised by the number of ANC MPs who voted with the opposition?
Oh, absolutely, Clement. I think the expectation was that there would be four ANC MPs who were basically declared that they would be voting according to conscience. And you would have expected that because of the cover of the secret ballot, that there would be a couple more. But the fact that it was around 26 ANC MPs that did support the motion, it tells you about the level of turbulence in the ANC and the fact that these people defied the line that was set down by the ANC leadership, and consciously so. That does tell you the story of the internal instability in the ANC.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, so the president is safe for now, but I think you'll agree that he was saved by the strength of the numbers and not necessarily the argument. And I mean, I don't even remember hearing any of those ANC MPs who spoke yesterday mentioning him or his successes. They made it all about the ANC.
No, there was no possible way that they can defend his actions. Remember, Clement, that the basis for this motion of no confidence was his cabinet reshuffle and the impact that it had on the economy and perceptions about South Africa. And you didn't find that any of the ANC MPs who did speak during the debate mentioned that or were able to present any kind of articulate defense of the president's actions on that score. But, you know, the line that was laid down by the ANC leadership, by the president and his defenders, is that this was about the ANC and it was about protecting the ANC. And, Minister Nathi Mteto went as far as calling it a coup, an attempted coup. And that is completely false. I mean, that is not the issue. The motion of no confidence was within the realm of the democratic means of holding the executive to account, holding the executive accountable. So that was a completely nonsensical argument. So you would have thought that in order to shut down this rebellion, even within its ranks, that the ANC would have been able to come up with some way to say or to stand by the president and defend him, make a proper defense of him, but they were clearly unable to do that.
So the ANC is claiming victory. The opposition is calling it a hollow victory. Are there winners here?
I think so. The opposition has a basis to feel that they have made an achievement, because it is very significant that over 20 ANC MPs did support the motion. I think the ANC is basically on a face-saving exercise, with the celebrations and with the line that the motion failed, because I think that everybody knows that the margin was quite close. The situation is quite unprecedented for an ANC president to be challenged in this way from within its ranks. And that, you know, that they have some serious soul searching to do now, because this is clearly not the end of the matter. There's a journey ahead, and I think it's going to be an extremely turbulent one for President Zuma.
Yeah, and of course, that impeachment case in the Constitutional Court coming up in September as well. I was speaking to Minister Lindi Wezulu, and she's calling for disciplinary action to be taken against some of those ANC members of parliament voting with the opposition. I'm still not sure how they'll be able to find out who voted with and against, but surely the Constitutional Court judgment protects some of those ANC MPs. I mean, it said if ANC MPs vote according to their conscience, no harm or even punitive action can be taken against them.
I think that that is a reflective, Clement, of the creeping authoritarianism and complete misunderstanding of the Constitution and what it provides for in this country, that such threats can be made. You know, those MPs who voted against the president, both within the ANC ranks and the opposition, were exercising their constitutional right to do so. And by basically threatening them, you know, that shows an abuse of power coming from a member of the executive. And you're right, there is no means to be able to track them down. And any attempt to do so, particularly trying to use the state security agencies in any way, is also criminal and unconstitutional. So I think that President Zuma's defenders had better be very careful in terms of what they do next and how they deal with the discontent within their ranks.
What now? Clearly the ANC has come out even more divided. Do you think they're going to take a conciliatory approach, or the battle lines have now been drawn?
Well, I think that, you know, with President Zuma's most ardent supporters, there is going to be some level of vengeance. And they are going to try and, you know, adopt some kind of jackboot tactics to prevent any kind of a resurgence of a rebellious attitude. But I think that it's going to be very difficult, both within the ANC caucus and within the ANC NEC, to rebuild and unite the various factions, and particularly this rebellion against President Zuma. And you know, I don't know how they do that, and I don't know, like, whether the ANC Secretary General, for example, is able to do that after he pronounced the line. And clearly, people defied him. Mm. So there's nobody in the ANC leadership right now that can be any kind of uniting force. And that it will be a huge problem for the ANC in the build-up to the December conference.
Well, the motion of no confidence may have failed, but in the words of Julius Malema, we are eating an elephant bit by bit. Ranjani Munsami, Associate Editor with Tiso Black Star, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
The Midday Report. Business.
The JSC closed today for the Women's Day public holiday, but the rand continues to trade. The local currency is trading near one-month lows, extending yesterday's losses after President Jacob Zuma survived a no-confidence vote in parliament by secret ballot. Nomura economist Peter Attard-Moltado says the failure of the vote yesterday, even under a secret ballot, will maintain weak business and consumer confidence and hold private sector investment back. Market sentiment has been dented by Donald Trump, the U.S. President Donald Trump's remarks that the country would respond aggressively to any threats from North Korea. Trump says North Korea will be, quote, met with fire and fury if it continued to make threats against the U.S. It's been reported that North Korea is considering missiles strike on Guam, a U.S. island territory, in response to Trump's threat. The rand is trading at 13.43 against the U.S. dollar, 17.49 against the pound, 15.78 against the euro. Brent crude, $52.21 a barrel. Gold at $1,268.68 an ounce. 35 minutes after 12, a story developing today. Emergency services officials and law enforcement officers and experts are still on the scene of a pedestrian bridge collapse along the N3 Geldenhuys interchange, where 5 people have been injured. It's understood that the bridge fell on 3 trucks and a car. Sandal spokesperson Vusi Noma is on the line from Johannesburg. Good afternoon to you, Vusi. When can we motorists expect the debris to be cleared and the N3 highway to be reopened? Do we have Vusi?
In the next 24 to 48 hours should be open. There's still some inspections going on here. I'm actually on site. We have the Department of Labor. We have independent engineers, Sunroll engineers. They're just doing some preliminary investigations, after which the clearing can start. And as I said, within 24 to 48 hours, we should have cleared the debris lying across the freeway.
And I know that investigations are still underway. Are there any preliminary findings? I mean, there's been some speculation that the collapse may have been caused by an earth tremor.
No, I would not encourage us to go into any speculation. Let's give the investigation chance, and then at the end of which we will communicate. There's a lot of theories currently flying, and I don't want to give credence to any of them.
And are there any other casualties besides the ones that we know of so far?
Well, it's actually five, the one that we confirmed. One was seriously injured and airlifted to Linmed Hospital. Two were transported by ambulance to a hospital here in Jimiston. And another two suffered minor injuries. So far, it's five people.
All right. Sunroll spokesperson Vusi Noma, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
20 minutes before 1 o'clock, President Jacob Zuma is expected to address a women's commemoration in Kimberley sometime today in the Northern Cape. This is the first event the president is attending after surviving yesterday's motion of no confidence. EWN's Masa Kikane is in Kimberley for us. Masa, when is the president expected to speak?
Afternoon, Clement. We're all on standby and waiting for him to arrive with bated breath, obviously. We aren't too sure as to exactly when he's going to be speaking, but after doing the rounds, it seems that he will be speaking a little later this afternoon, because as he arrives, he also needs to be briefed. But Clement, we also do have a few other people who are here with noting the Social Development Minister and the Minister and the President of the League, ANC Women's League, but Thabile Dlamini is here as well as her leadership. She's seated here with her deputy, Sisi Ntombela, as well as the International Relations Minister, Maite Nkwana Mashobane, Minister of Women, Susan Shabangu, and as well as Minister Faith Motsepe. And they're all seemingly in good spirits. I mean, you can see them interacting with people who are here, coming over to this, asking to take pictures with them. So seemingly in high spirits, but we're obviously waiting to hear what President Jacob Zuma will have to say after sleeping on what was quite a narrow win last night, but nonetheless a victory for him.
Yeah, look, I'm not surprised that those ministers are having a jolly moment. I mean, these are people we know to be supporters of President Jacob Zuma. I don't know if you've spoken to some of them, but they must be happy about yesterday's events in Parliament.
Well, I haven't gotten to get a word in with them as yet, but they are seemingly happy and they seemingly are in good spirits and seemingly confident as well. I will get to speak to some of them later on and just get their reaction as to the results of yesterday's motion of no confidence.
And I see there are a lot of ANC Women's League members there. This is an ANC structure that has always supported the president. So it's a comfortable space for President Jacob Zuma. And I imagine he may reflect on yesterday's events and even take a swipe at his detractors.
Absolutely. Last night, he briefly did mention that, you know, it's not the first time and the opposition will try and unseat him. And he says it's not the last. But he says this will never happen. There will never be. The ANC is far too strong for that. So, I mean, that's a little bit that he gave us yesterday, a sneak peek. So we're expecting him to delve more into that today and maybe, you know, take a few jabs at his detractors, but also maybe take a few jabs at those ANC MPs who did vote against him.
Yeah, indeed. And Masa, I mean, the Northern Cape ANC, we know that Premier Sylvia Lucas supports President Jacob Zuma, but there's a new leadership of the ANC that has somehow shown an allegiance to the Deputy President, Cyril Ramaphosa. Have you seen some of those leaders yet there?
So apparently the new chair in the province will be arriving with the president, which will be quite interesting to see because he's publicly declared his support for Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa. In fact, in the Northern Cape, they were the first province to declare their support for the deputy president. So to see the reaction and the interaction between the new chair as well as some of the MECs here with the president will be quite interesting to take note of, especially that entrance if they will be coming through together.
Thank you so much, Masaki Kana, EWN Report. It's actually going to be interesting to see when Masa gets to speak to those ministers that are there supporting the president, if they'll mention anything about the Deputy High Education Minister, Mduduzi Manana, and whether they'll put pressure on the police to act. Thank you, Masaki Kana, EWN Reporter.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
The DA held a briefing in Cape Town this afternoon to announce its plan of action following that failed motion of no confidence in the president yesterday. And I see on EWN reporter Maimani making that announcement that the motion, they will be tabling that motion to dissolve parliament tomorrow. EWN's Kevin Brandt has been listening to Musi Maimani make that announcement. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. What is Musi saying about this motion to dissolve parliament?
Always a pleasure, Clement. Good afternoon. Well, the Democratic Alliance, relentless in their pursuit of President Jacob Zuma and essentially also then the African National Congress, saying that come tomorrow they will table a motion to have Parliament resolved so that the country can go to an early election. They feel that we're now in a crisis in light of yesterday's motion of no confidence falling flat against President Jacob Zuma, saying that it's now up to the electorate. The electorate should decide who should lead the country. They obviously feel that it is not President Zuma and that it is also not the ANC.
And I see that he's saying that this is a responsible thing to do, but what kind, has he explained how they will go about tabling this motion to dissolve parliament? What kind of reasons they're going to be putting on the paper?
Well, he explained that he understands that it's not as easy a process to be followed now. Initially, this motion will now have to be tabled in Parliament. And then, of course, the IEC also has to get involved in terms of the process going forward. Now, it remains still to be seen how the opposition party members and the rest in, of Parliament feel with regard to that. I believe that this might also mean that there's another vote that's set to come up in the National Assembly. And then the decision to then go ahead to the polls as the DA wanted, they feel that leadership should be changed in the country and they feel that it should be done right now, Clement.
And EFF leader Julius Malema saying yesterday that the ninth motion of no confidence is on the way, and I'm assuming that the DA will be supporting this.
Definitely so, and I also believe that they gained some confidence in terms of the number of ANC MPs who voted in their favor or voted alongside the opposition parties, and that is something that Musi Maimane also spoke about. He said, yes, the motion in President Jacob Zuma did not go through, but in terms of politics, it signifies a significant change that is coming as they now feed off this confidence with regard to the number of ANC MPs who voted with the opposition party, Clement.
Yeah, just before I let you go, Kevin, any word on Project 2019? I know Musi Maimane, in most of the briefings, you will speak a lot about the plans heading to the 2019 elections and the coalition talks that are underway. Opposition parties have worked closely and quite well together ahead of this motion of no confidence in the president yesterday. Did he say anything about Project 2019 and whether there's agreement and meetings amongst these opposition parties to work together?
Well, no specific mention with regard to Project 19, but simply saying in light of this motion that the DA will now table in Parliament, that they will obviously lobby the support of the opposition party members. They also spoke about the DA's policies, because that also came under discussion during this, indicating or questioning rather from some of the journalists whether or not the DA has the necessary policies in place to call for an early election and as they then wish to take the leadership of the country forward.
EWN reporter Kevin Brandt, thank you so much for your time.
The Midday Report on your number one news and talk station.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta taking an early lead as results from national polls rolled in today. This is according to the election board. But the opposition dismissed the numbers as fake and said their own tally showed them they were winning. EWN's Kenya correspondent Voldy Karelse joins us now from the East African country. Good afternoon to you, Voldy. Raila Odinga is calling the early election results a sham. At that late last night's press briefing, what are his concerns?
Well, Clement, I was at Odinga's press briefing this morning. He gave one at around 10 a.m. Kenyan time. And mainly what it centered around was that NASA now claims that the IEBC, the Electoral Commission's main database, was hacked. They're saying they have evidence, and they showed this alleged hack paper trail to the media. It says hackers went in at around just past midnight, at around 10 to 1 this morning, and swung the votes in favor of Uhuru Kenyatta.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember hearing Kenyatta calling on whoever loses to concede the race. Has he responded to Odinga's statements yet?
It was very interesting. The Jubilee Party, its Secretary General, held a briefing just shortly before Odinga came out to brief the media, saying that should NASA call the credibility of the poll results into question, they need to do so for all of the areas. So not just for the presidential polls, but also for the seats for governor, senators, and those county assembly members, so the MCAs, as they call them here, that's basically a local councillors, we would know it. And then interestingly enough, Odinga saying that that's exactly what they will do. They will tell their governors, their senators, who might have won under the NASA ticket or the ODM ticket, to reject the results, even if they did win with a landslide victory. Now, that's sure to cause trouble. We have seen trouble flare up in the opposition stronghold in the west of Kenya, in Kisumu, where there have been running battles with police and protesters who are calling for Uhuru to go.
Yeah, and I see the Kenyan Election Commission is not yet in a position to confirm or deny Odinga's claims, but are there any investigations that are underway?
Interestingly enough, Clement, the Electoral Commission giving a briefing about 35 minutes ago saying they will investigate these claims. And they're not, as you're saying, confirming or denying that they were indeed hacked. But of course, there were concerns just after the body of Chris Masondo was found. He was the IEBC's ICT manager. His mutilated body was found just days before the elections. And of course, that was always going to be a concern. But really, what the media pressed Odinga on why he didn't raise this at the media briefing he gave at midnight last night, as well as at 1 a.m. NASA put out a statement. They didn't refer to the alleged hack then, and suddenly this morning there are these allegations that the system was hacked into. And they also wouldn't, interestingly enough, reveal their sources, because how they got in this information is obviously a source of concern for the IEBC, but the commission saying this is something that they will investigate. These polls are critical, and the credibility of the Electoral Commission is critical in this.
And what about the election observers? What are they saying? And are there perhaps fears of possible violence?
There are definite fears of possible violence. I think there's still an uneasy calm here in Nairobi. I spent just after I'd been to the Odinga briefing, I went around the biggest slum here, Kibera, and I just drove around because that's also an Odinga stronghold. It's where he voted yesterday. It's very, very calm, but tense. So the shops are closed, businesses are closed. People haven't reported for work today as they wait and see what will happen. We've had no word yet, not from the African Union or from the Commonwealth observers that are in the country. There are about 5,000 observers in 47 counties in Kenya at the moment. None of them have come out yet to comment on what Odinga is saying. I think they're all just also waiting and seeing. Everybody is at the National Tallying Center at the Bomas at the moment, just watching these results trickle in. Maybe I'll just give you an idea. Uhuru Kenyatta stayed quite firmly on this lead at 54%, and Odinga at the moment at just over 44%, and those results were updated just about 12 minutes ago. So these are preliminary results that haven't been verified by the Electoral Commission, but it's causing great tension in the country at the moment already.
And what happens next? How many days do they have before announcing the official results?
Well, the Electoral Commission has a week until they have to announce the official results. There is also the opposition's claims that they need to provide them with forms forms known as 34As. These are basically a backup, a manual backup to the electronic voting system. And that's what the opposition was calling for last night before they raised concerns of the hack. So now that's kind of been lost in the noise. But the commission saying that they can provide these 34As in order to verify these results. The results now need to be verified. And then, obviously, we will know what the official results are. But they have a week in which to do that. And when pressed, Odinga couldn't say whether or not they would challenge us in court, as they did in 2013 and still lost. You remember in 2013, Uhuru Kenyatta won by just 8,000 votes. So it was very, very tight. But this is really, these early results have handed him an overwhelming majority, which is what the Jubilee Party predicted would happen.
Indeed. EWN Kenya correspondent Voldy Cuddle, so thank you so much for your time. 5 minutes before 1 o'clock, you're with the Midday Report. I'm Clement Manyatela, standing in for Stephen Crotas. U.S. President Donald Trump threatening North Korea with fire and fury like the world has never seen amid reports that North Korea has made a nuclear weapon advance. Brooks Spector is an associate editor with the Daily Maverick and the U.S. correspondent, and he joins us now live from Joburg. Good afternoon to you, Brooks. What's happening with Trump and North Korea?
Well, good afternoon, Clem. It's good to be with you. Well, Donald Trump seems to be having something of a mind meld with Kim Jong-un in terms of the kinds of rhetoric that you use. I, quite frankly, I've never seen a U.S. president engage in that kind of nuclear threat and bluster. It's the kind of thing you usually expect coming from people like the hereditary dictator of North Korea. The North Koreans have been working for years now to create an intercontinental missile that could be married to a weaponized nuclear device that has the guidance capable of delivering it to a place that has been decided upon. Those are all complicated tasks. And they apparently, if you have read the intelligence estimates that were leaked in the newspapers the other day, they apparently have made advances in that sufficient to make it possible that they may well be able to deliver on such threats if they so chose. But then Donald Trump turned to his North Korean counterpart during his vacation in New Jersey and said, as your lead-in said, fire and fury, the like of which has never been known on the planet. This is the kind of rhetoric that turns the temperature up rather than turns it down, so that the diplomats, as well as the kinds of military force that the U.S. does have at its command, can begin to tamp this back down. Never get that genie back in the bottle, but even so.
Yeah, so the temperature has been turned up, and I suppose everyone is now wondering if Trump will follow up on this pledge, and if he doesn't, what does this do to the credibility of the U.S.?
You're absolutely right. It's really not a good idea to make these kinds of wild threats without having a plan to carry them out, or alternatively, to have some other plan that begins to make it possible not to have the threat. And I mean, that Donald Trump has in some ways backed himself into a bit of a rhetorical corner on this. And all that Kim Jong-un has to do in North Korea is to issue yet another bit of rhetorical wildness. And then we're off to the races with more counter threats. Not a good place for us to be right now.
Yeah. And doesn't this, Brooks, this episode draw parallels to former President Barack Obama's own geological red line? I mean, remember in 2013, he said the use of chemical weapons in Syria's civil war would trigger an American military response. But when it happened, he failed to follow up on his promise. Are we seeing deja vu here?
Well, I'm not sure. But the thing that comes to my mind most readily is the 1962, maybe before you were born, the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, when the then Soviet Union put nuclear-tipped missiles in Cuba, which was 90 miles, 150 kilometers from the United States mainland, and about 9-10 minutes of flying time. In the process of putting the quarantine around Cuba, the Kennedy administration was very careful to keep the rhetoric well tamped down rather than ramped up. I'm afraid that Mr. Trump likes the other course.
Yeah, and what about the defense secretary and, of course, the chief of staff, John Kelly? Are they likely to sign off on any military action?
Well, I mean, the secretary of state, Rex Tillerson, right now is in has been traveling in Asia and meeting with people from other Asian nations. The secretary of defense, Jim Mattis, is in Washington. I don't know that either of those two men are cheerleaders for this kind of rhetoric. They may, in fact, be quietly saying, now we need to keep this kind of thing under control. But as you and I have learned to our astonishment, Donald Trump really is in charge of his own rhetoric, and he's given to issuing statements off the cuff and when he wakes up. If I were in charge of his White House staff, I'd be chasing after him and say, excuse me, sir, can you please give us that electronic messaging device so you can't send any more of these things out for a while.
Well, yeah. Brooke Spector, associate editor with the Daily Maverick and also the U.S. correspondent. Thank you so much for your time. All right, that's how we wrap up the Midday Report. Thank you so much for holding my hand. The Zania Musaka Show is up next. Stephen Grotas will be back with you tomorrow. But first, here's your latest Eyewitness News.